4.6. Today you're listening to Chanel, Amir and Richard to liven up your Saturday afternoon. Good morning. Good afternoon, lads.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. You seem to have had a tough time coming here, I believe, Chanel.
Do you want to expose me to my parents, Richard?
Okay.
No, it's fine. I did have a tough time. Driving into the studio today, swerved into oncoming traffic, and there was a bit of an altercation with a couple of cars in me, but we're fine. Mm-hmm. There were no injuries. There were no damaged vehicles. We were just... there was just a bit of temper flaring here and there, but that's fine. We're okay now.
Okay. So what have you got for us today, Chanel?
So today we're going to talk... Well, we're basically going to do a news wrap. Now, Amir, you're probably as across this as I am. I'm not sure, but I work in a newsroom, so I have to be across the news 24/7. We'll be talking about the main events from this week in New Zealand, and let's see if this, if time lets us, we'll go around the world as well. Richard, I think you had some... You wanted a hard-hitting topic to start us off with.
Yes, hard-hitting topic is the most thing that irritates me during this time of the year is this weather, you know.
Yes.
It keeps... it's so fickle and it keeps changing every now and then. Tell us something about it. You have been running all over the place telling us about the weather. So tell us something more about it.
The weather... some of the viewers, listeners will know that I work as a journalist and as for News Hub. And at the start of the week, on Monday and Tuesday, I had to go out and cover weather events because we had two nights of thunderstorms that basically wreaked havoc all across Auckland's waterfront. So the first night, the cloud, which is the event center on the waterfront, was affected by the weather because, you know, with the wind that we were having that day, or that night rather, two panels of the roof of the cloud were ripped clean off.
Wow.
Yep. Went into the harbour, you know, caused chaos for people there. And luckily it was about 10:30 at night, so there was no real damages. But the same could not be said for suburbs by the sea. Now, St. Helier's was hit really bad as well.
They can afford it.
They can afford it, I hope. But it was still, I mean, it's still an inconvenience when you're sitting in your... den at 10 or 30 at night, maybe with a cup of hot chocolate, listening to the rain, and suddenly a whole part of your roof just gets ripped off and you're left exposed to the elements. So it was a wild night on Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
And then Monday, again, a little bit more with rich people, but a lot of people owning boats in the marinas in Auckland were affected because the wind and the rain and all kinds of, you know, other elements basically toppled a lot of the boats that were moored in the West Haven Marina.
Uh-huh.
A 50-foot-long catamaran was turned over.
I read about it. Yeah, somebody trying to hold it down for almost 30 minutes before he got help.
That's right. And then they couldn't flip it back up because the mast got stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, that was a whole procedure the next day with cranes and stuff. Cars flew into the water.
Mm-hmm.
There's two seaplanes that are just in front of all the restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
In Halsey Wharf. They sort of detached from their moorings and hit a car ferry, and that sort of went adrift to sea. And I mean, it was a mess, but luckily that night residents at least were protected.
But tell me, Chanel, you know, this doesn't get covered on the in the print media. It's all there in the electronic or digital media as such. So if you look at the print media on those days, there's not much of coverage. So what is it? Are they trying to sort of, you know, say everything is fine, nothing to worry? Or is it just to say we don't want to create a panic in the city?
Oh, God, no, because journalists are there to tell what's happening. So there's nothing about, like, trying to smooth situations over or anything. They're just going to report on what the facts are. As far as I'm aware, with the catamaran, with the cloud, with the damage to the West Haven Marina, those and the damage to St. Helier's residents, every one of those incidents were reported.
In the print, is it?
In the print as well.
Okay.
But at the same time...
Probably I read the wrong paper.
Maybe you did. But of course, I mean, if you're talking... For me personally, I tend to think of stuff as print media as well, because they have outposts in you know, the Western Leader, the Central Leader, all of these things. That's, they're all their papers, and if you, in localized papers, there definitely were stuff like that. But yeah, I guess it's just, it's not a conspiracy or a cover up or anything. It's just that it report the facts. But we did speak to whether NIWA forecasts the week before to preview it, and they said that these are just to be expected. This is winter. This is what happened. So in that sense, there is no cause for panic. It's just winter. Cause of nature, yeah.
Amir, what do you think? Is this the global warming playing up? Because does this happen on a regular basis?
Well, that's a really good thing you brought up, Richard. In terms of global warming, scientists have been openly saying that with increasing global temperature rise, sea level rise, there are these infrequent storms that are going to become more frequent. In a New Zealand context, with so many councils declaring climate emergencies, it's definitely going to be more relevant. Mm-hmm. As you all know here in the news, Trump, who's been really echoing the popular statement, basically denies climate change and really has pinned it on China as a conspiracy against the American people. So it's something that really needs to be looked at. We know for a fact that with increasing global warming, there's going to be more infrequent storms that are going to happen. So in Auckland itself, I just want to touch upon a topic, is that the lower amount of rain that's been raining in the last couple of months, at this time now, Watercare's dams, you normally have them about 88% full capacity. What's happened is because of the low amount of rain, in July, we only had water filled to about 59%. Now, that's not so much of a cause for concern. Luckily, Auckland has a diversified source of water supply. The dams are one part, but then you also have the Waikato River, which is being the biggest river in New Zealand. It's a huge source of water. However, if the drought continues, that's going to be a major cause for concern. Although with the recent amount of rains and the amount of with the deluge we've seen in the past couple of weeks, and at the start of August, you can see that the rain has brought the dam levels up to 70%. However, it's something that Aucklanders do need to consider, is that watching their water consumption just to make sure the right amount of source of water in the dams as well.
Yeah, I mean, weren't we warned about this a couple of months ago, though? They said, you know, our reserves are low. But no, I don't think anyone really paid attention to it, because that same week, the Taupo sewage spill happened, and sort of everyone's attention got diverted. And I certainly probably haven't cut down.
I feel these are a bit of over-the-top warnings as such, you know. There's so much of rain. We have so much of... I don't think we tap more than 10% of our resources, the water resources. But why this so-called alarming warning to consumers what to consume or not? Why not tell the agriculture or the cattle farmers that overgrazing, over-cattle farming is causing the problem?
Exactly. I think you do have to look at... The importance of all these different industries as well. Like, agriculture is a big part of New Zealand, so I guess you could say they get away with a slap on the wrist rather than being told off. But one of the things you do have to consider is that the recent warnings, they've not been basically forced warnings. They've been, it's more of a voluntary thing that Watercare has mentioned. It's just that try to use less water just so that...
A precaution.
But however, once dam levels do fall beyond a certain... alarming threshold, you can see forced water restrictions on different places.
So we are saying that global warming is here to stay, and we need to take all actions that are required. So any ideas as to what the New Zealand government is planning to do to sort of restore some amount of balance that we require, or contribute to restoring the balance?
I mean, just going back on before, that's what the Pacific Island Forum is about right now in Tuvalu. At least New Zealand is taking action, whereas you can't say the same thing for Australia, who is in a whole lot of hot water for not really doing anything about their coal industry. As you said, agriculture is our biggest industry, whereas in Australia, coal is. Over here, we are doing things. I mean, there's definitely, and again, as you mentioned, Amir, you know, almost all councils have declared climate emergency. So there is a push right now from the public and from the government, especially with the Greens as they are in power, to lower our own carbon footprint. So it's we started doing with the plastic, getting rid of plastic bags for one. You know, that's...
That was a good move.
A great move. Because, honestly, it's prompted my own mother, who has parties like every week, every month with, you know, lots of plastic and stuff, to go, oh, I must reduce my plastic use. So, I mean, you know, you can definitely see the change happening across the board. I know that the agricultural sector, I can't comment much on them because I actually don't know what's going on in behind... in their own sector, but I do know that they are sort of in talks on how to reduce emissions. What else are we doing? We're doing movements, localized movements as well, of cleaning up beaches. For example, a friend of mine goes out every weekend to clean beaches, just to make sure that there's, you know, there's no issues over there. But in terms of climate, I personally don't know how farmers are working.
Well, these small little steps will go towards restoring the balance as such. What's the other thing happening in New Zealand? What has happened other than climate change? There was a lot of, you know, emotional and passionate talk in the parliament recently on a bill that was passed. Would you like to? I think it's a lady's topic, Jen's topic.
You have people arguing that it is a woman's topic, and this is, of course, about the abortion law reform, where the first reading in Parliament did pass successfully, almost unanimously. At least there was a majority of votes that said, yes, we do need to decriminalise abortion. And there's talk about it going, you know, 20 weeks. Now, I won't bother explaining what the issue is, because I'm sure at this stage all our listeners will have an understanding of what it is. Basically, we want to decriminalize it. You're not a criminal if you have an abortion. This is such a moral topic that I find I would not want to be in cabinet at this stage to try to make these decisions. But I think, from my point of view, and this is my own point of view, not influenced by religion, culture, family, friends, nothing. This is what I feel, is that in an extreme event, in a medical event where you're just debating between the life of your baby or the mother or both or whatever, you know, then I can understand where sometimes a procedure like this would need to be had. I can't speak for another argument is rape cases, where it's not your choice to have, you know, to be pregnant, and that's where you have an issue. That's a mental state of mind, and it's a mental issue which I can't comment on personally. I've never had to deal with any kind of thing in that sector. So I suppose that's something that where the woman affected would have to make her own decision. The only part I don't agree with, and I know that this doesn't happen a lot, but it also actually happens on the sly, where people have abortion as a form of aftercare, you know,
as
like
a form of birth control.
As a form of birth
really
control.
Pregnancy.
Yeah. And I mean, I've had experiences in terms of people I know who've gone and, you know, had procedures, and more than once as well, where, but I can't personally see that that's a justified way of as a justified enough reason to do that. So I'd probably be a very bad decision maker in this law reform, in the sense that I'm completely torn. And I don't know if it's a woman's right issue in terms of if you're in a relationship or in a family where the father also has a say. I'm not at that stage, so maybe I might feel differently about it. That's, you know, if I was, but personally, I think if you're going in that context, then yes, both partners do have a say in what's happening.
Sure. I think Chanel, you should sort of read out some of the concepts which have been covered by the abortion bill. I think if somebody could sort of look at what would the changes actually do. It says women would be able to refer themselves for an abortion in the first 20 weeks of pregnancy. This replaces the current system that requires an abortion to be approved by two certifying consultants before procedure. After 20 weeks, the woman will have to meet a statutory test before being given the procedure. So what is a statutory test? Guys, can you have a look at it? I think you need to talk on it till I get my music fixed, because there's a problem with the music on this place. We had this a couple of weeks ago, and it is still coming around as such.
Sure. Well, a statutory test, if I may, like, basically it's a It just means when a person is considering having an abortion, they'd have to go to a registered health practitioner who would have to certify that the woman in question reasonably believes that the abortion is appropriate with regard to the pregnant woman's physical and mental health being. So basically it means that you have to go to someone who is a registered professional who assesses the case on a case basis and basically gives their approval to that. Really what the bill is trying to change is that right now, up to about 20 weeks pregnancy, a woman needs to go to two different medical professionals and get the approval. Mm-hmm. So what this bill effectively changes is that it allows a woman to make that decision herself up until that 20 weeks mark, and after that, that's when you need the permission of one practitioner.
So let's listen to some music.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're listening to Sushekha Dhanpar on 104.6 Planet FM. I've got Amir Bonamis and Chanel Fernandez, who anchors for TV3. Is it that right?
Yes, I'm not an anchor, I'm just a reporter.
Oh, okay. Well, how about the news as such? Well, I just promoted you here internally.
Yes,
to,
it is. Yeah. TV3, thank you.
It's on TV3. So, Amir, you were rattling away as an expert on the abortion law that has been introduced in the parliament, and it has passed its first reading with 94 of them voting in favor as such. What's next happening in the city of Auckland?
Well, one thing that's very exciting, as always a colourful event, is the local body elections that are happening this year. Mm-hmm. The 12th of October 2019 is an important day to pencil. Now, if you're a registered voter, there's a number of things that you're going to be voting on. In Auckland, so we're voting for the mayor, local councillors, for district health board leaders, and if you live in an area which is governed by a licensing trust, such as the Portage and Waitakere licensing trust areas, you're voting for leaders for them as well. Some interesting stats I brought up in the Auckland region. So there's just yesterday, Friday, they released a preliminary list of the different candidates. So there's 21 candidates who are feeling for mayor this year. Out of them, the four most prominent we have so far are incumbent mayor Phil Goff, John Tamihere, Craig Lord, and Peter Vaughan. Now, these have some very interesting policies, which will be published this Tuesday on the Electron's website. So please go ahead and have a look and familiarise yourself before exercising your right to vote. There's also local and regional councillors, DHBs, and something interesting is that two of the 13 wards that we have, that are namely the Franklin and Rodney wards, only have one contender. So provided no one else puts their name in the ballot or is running for the race by Tuesday, they'll basically get re-elected unopposed. Mm-hmm. Just some important dates as well. 21st of August, there'll be the official public notification of the candidates. The 26th of August, is when the profiles will be published on the elections website. The 20th of September is when voting begins. So please look out for your voting packs in the mail. The 8th of October is the last day to vote for them. So just make sure you get your, if you're posting your votes, make sure you post it by that date. And the 12th of October is when it's the last day to vote in person in a ballot at midday. So that's when it closes. Mm-hmm. So local elections are always an interesting topic. You have your serious contenders, if I may put it that way, and you have some interesting contenders, basically, who are there to promote different interests that they have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I personally just want to put a note out there to younger people to vote.
Mm-hmm.
There's a joke in the newsroom that we have where when it's a political story, even especially a local, political story, where we say that, is this news even relevant to other people? Because no one seems to care so much, apart from journalists, about what's happening in politics, especially localized politics. And I sort of, was talking to my dad about this early this morning, and he said, yeah, we don't really have something in New Zealand where we have, civics the way we do in India, where we grow up learning politics. And as a result, you have a lot of people entering the voting age demographic where they don't really know and don't actually care of who's in the local board, who's our mayor. And I feel that's a shame, because if we are living in a democratic society, mm-hmm. that is what democracy isn't it? You
exactly.
have to go get mm-hmm. together and vote. Mm-hmm. So for younger people, as Amir says, there's a lot of information online. And I highly recommend going and doing your research, not just listening to people, reading the news, and just trying to get an understanding of what it is. Because, look, Jacinda Ardern was voted in Mount Albert, wasn't she? And now she's the Prime Minister of New Zealand. So
it all starts somewhere.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So I would just like to sort of fill in there, because I feel that there is some gap or lack of understanding about what's exactly happening in that space. So New Zealand's local government structural arrangement was significantly reformed in 1989, when approximately 700 councils and special purpose bodies were all amalgamated to create 86 authorities. Then, as of 1st of November 2010, one regional council and seven territorial authorities were made up to form what we call as the Auckland Council today. So it's a major council as such. But as a result of these changes, the ground level has not shifted much as such. So there are 78 local authorities in Auckland, comprised of 11 regional councils and 67 territorial authorities. So you have these different types of boards, local boards, where candidates are contesting for those local boards. One of the most disturbing things which I have found about these local boards, it is those same people, mm-hmm. the same set of contenders are there who are contesting for those local boards. And come elections and all their boards start getting propped up in those localities. So what I would call, as you rightly pointed out, Chanel, is that the youth, the youngsters, should take a keen interest, and they can go to the Encyclopedia of New Zealand. There is a site called the Encyclopedia of New Zealand to get some more information on these local authorities. And come 3 years down the line, they can put their hand up. In fact, there is a gentleman from our community, Alston De Silva, who is contesting from the Mount Roskill board. He came in here as an immigrant, so he's now put up his hand, and we wish him all the best. Absolutely. So is there anybody out there among the listeners who would like to contest from the award? What about you, Chanel? Next time?
Probably not, because I think I'm more comfortable reporting on politics than making
So then let's make Amir contest from the Glen Eden constituency. What about you, Amir?
Maybe somewhere down the line. I think just to add to what you said, Richard, it's something that local body elections is something that you really need to pay attention to. You really need to familiarize yourself with what these candidates' policies are. I just want to bring to the topic, if you've been paying attention to the news recently, one of the mayoral candidates has proposed forward the privatization of water care. Now, for listeners among us, water care is the branch of Auckland Council. Well, it's actually a separate council-controlled organization that provides water and wastewater services to households in the Auckland region. One of the candidates, who I won't name, has proposed the sale of about a 49% share of water care to a private company, which he believes will help pay temporarily for the beach cleanups, so the cleanup of dirty water. So, Chanel, if I may ask, if you've basically familiarize yourself with this, what are your views on this topic?
No, absolutely. I think with an essential service like water, there's always a danger if you talk about privatizing something like this, because it could go either way. This is kind of like privatizing healthcare, isn't it? I mean, this is
exactly
a basic human right. And you'd rather there be enough governmental influence that make sure that everybody has a portion, or at least has access to clean water and running water. That's what makes us a first world country, one of the reasons why we're a first world country.
That's right.
And then you'd rather than, of course, having a privatized sort of corporate head or, you know, team of people kind of lining their pockets and more interested in lining their pockets than actually the fundamental basic human rights. So, yeah, and in a place like New Zealand especially, where water is key, I mean, we're surrounded by it. It runs through, you know, from the top to the south. We should not have to
Pay.
Yeah, absolutely.
For a basic necessity.
Yeah.
I just want to add as well, Chanel, something I just want to make clear is that these views are my own personal views, because I may or may not be employed by the said organization. With a public necessity such as water, right now, being a government entity, because it's a public necessity, one of the things about water care is that should a customer not pay their bills due to financial reasons or whatever, water care still has an obligation to still provide water to that person's house, even though they haven't paid or in months. Now, with the danger of with the situation is that if a company goes private, there is a fear that they'll treat the issue just like gas or water or electricity or other utilities or internet, where if a person doesn't pay their bills in time, that utility will be shut off, which could be disastrous for people who are not well off in our society.
Yeah,
so that's something as well. Just another thing to note as well, because it's a government entity, all the money that water care gets is from the water bills that you pay. So all the money that is gotten goes towards water infrastructure in the Auckland region. So none of that goes towards paying for museums, paying for transport, paying for other events that Auckland can, because it's a separate entity, Auckland Council. So there is also the fear that should the company be, the organisation be privatised, investors are going to be demanding dividends, and that's something that might not be in the best interest of the people.
Yeah, otherwise we don't have
like one. So is this privatization because it is a cash cow and the council wants to cash it up? Or is it because that somebody is waiting with a basket somewhere down the road to make a good buck out of it?
Look, I do have to say that is something that's speculation. This is what the idea was gotten for one of the said mayoral candidates. So there's no plans that I know of, or that's something that the organization would have to be contacted directly. Personally, I don't think it's a cash cow, just because it is a government organization. So because of that, it is required to operate at the lowest cost possible. That it's in the best interest of the people. Yeah, the sale of the organisation might not necessarily be in the best interests of the people. So that's something that needs to be looked at for sure.
So what would we do to conserve water as such? Because that's also a part of the global warming strategy. I mean, I'll start with you, Chanel, because the women in the house consume more than the men in the house.
I mean, you could say that or you could not. If you're washing your hair, yes. Richard, I'm not, a few men that I know, like maybe my father or you, would not have a need to do that. But yes, it was washing long hair can be a problem. But no, in all seriousness, and I have to practice what I preach as well, but I think it's the little thing that counts. Mm-hmm. Washing your hands, for example, if you're soaping up, turn the tap off. You know, same with in the shower. If you're soaping up or whatever, turn the shower off. And just find little ways to conserve water. Mm-hmm. Maybe don't water your lawn when, you know, when it's Auckland, especially because the rain turns on and off. I mean, you know, look at the seasons, look at how the weather is and things like that. And same goes with washing your car and things like that. So it's the little things I think we can make changes with.
I was thinking, you know, there's always a debate in most of the houses. Should I wash my dinner dishes or lunch dishes in the sink? In the KV way, or should I put it in the dishwasher, which is more economical?
I think, I'll answer that first. Basically, I think the most important thing is the Kiwi way, similar to the Indian way, has been there for a long time. Basically, you're using the same tub of water to soak and wash all your dishes. I think that's something that's really important. With the dishwasher, there's copious amounts of water that are being used, and not to mention there's quite a lot of hot water and detergent being used as well. I personally prefer the traditional way, if I may put it. Mm-hmm. And as you said, there's a lot of other different ways to save as well, like using your laundry water to over your lawns rather than mm-hmm. use fresh water that needs to be treated. While waiting in the shower for the hot water to eventually arrive, you can use that and mm-hmm. essentially use that water for something else. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there are many different tips and tricks that can be used mm-hmm. to conserve water, just to make sure that you save on your household bill as well as mm-hmm. use less water from the grid.
What about water harvesting? What are the council plans of water harvesting? Like in many houses, I find that they have put a small little tank or they have put a small little way of catching the rainwater.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think that's a really
So is the council sort of like they used to give concessions or tax breaks for those who were installing solar panels? Is there something that the council is doing for harvesting rainwater? I don't have to use my hose pipe, I can use the...
Yeah. Well, I know that out west, especially like Titirangi and stuff, there's loads of people doing that.
Titirangi is not west. Huh? Henderson is also the west.
Yes, but I went to a local meeting in Titirangi
recently,
and yes, it seemed to me that the community in general was taking that very seriously in terms of conservation, especially with solar panels as well as water harvesting. So definitely good idea, but as to whether the government is...
whether the council is ready to give us some concessions.
I don't know.
Most of the places in Silverdale, Albany, people living in larger plots, they have their own rainwater harvesting systems. They have tanks. They have tankers that come to fill up their water tanks. Mm-hmm. I had a colleague of mine who used to be always pretty tensed up during the summer times because water levels in those tanks would go down. Mm. So I used to tell him, you stink today, man.
That's probably a good reason for that.
You were saying something. I just cut you off. Sorry about that.
I'm just saying, Richard, that's a really important topic. You mentioned certain places in mind that have a lot of rainwater tanks, and there's actually a good reason for that. Before the amalgamation of the councils, a lot of houses were actually not connected to the water grid, believe it or not. And places such as Silverdale, Albany, Warkworth, Beachlands and Maraitai, for example, they're really good examples. They would have to, A, either rely on private companies or, B, collect their own sources of water. So in option B, you also had a lot of people having their own rainwater tanks, which really teaches you the value of water mm-hmm. Rather than paying for water at a premium price from private or government companies. So that's something that can also be used. I know, just in regards to whether the council subsidizes that or not, that's something that I have to research. I do know that back in the days of Waitakere City, in West Auckland, they did subsidize rainwater tanks. So that's something that could be used. I know there is a one-off capital investment, but over the long term, especially in winter, that's something that could definitely save you a lot of money.
Yeah, absolutely. I personally would actually quite like to do something along those lines because we have a swimming pool.
Sure.
And we wait for the rain to come and fill it up because, you know, there's no way we really want to
spend
extra
thousands of liters.
Yes, and it just feels like a waste. So I think it would be really interesting. I wonder if I can put that idea to my parents and be like, we could get solar panels installed and start harvesting rainwater. It would be excellent.
Let me make an attempt if I can get some music. Yay! Some Goan rap, Chanel?
I've never heard of Goan rap, and that was so cool. I'm very, very excited. I'm going to go look this up afterwards.
Okay, so you're listening to Sushegad Dhanpar on 104.6 Planet FM. We are on current affairs. We have discussed on weather change, climate change, We discussed about the abortion bill. Amit brought up the topic on water care and plans by one of the mayoral candidates to privatize water care and what it would mean to us. We are very happy that Alston Da Silva from our community is contesting the election for the local board from the Mount Roskill area. Where do we go from here, Chanel?
How about...
Nami kayeta.
I cannot answer back in concrete, but how about Fonterra?
Fonterra. What's wrong with Fonterra? What's the problem?
What's the problem is that there's too much money at the top with Fonterra.
Is it?
I'd say so, yes.
So why don't we just sack them?
If you're looking at Shane
like,
Jones...
Would you like to take the
then
job?
Yes. No, gosh, no.
I think you should take the job, Chanel.
No.
Just imagine.
I cannot handle my own finances, Richard. I don't think I'll be able to handle the sector's biggest name finances.
So what's wrong with them, Chanel?
So Fonterra, as you all know, it's not been the best year, or couple of years rather. Fonterra signaled a huge loss for the year, with them saying the year's yet to come for dairy farmers. The company has announced a $675 million loss for the financial year, primarily due to write-downs of its assets. Now, sadly, this is the second year in a row that the company has made a loss after last year's $196 million loss the previous year. So at the moment, as you can understand, the company has no plans of paying a dividend to its shareholders.
Wow. Go and protest? Is anybody holding shares in Fonterra at the moment?
No. Just to add to that, I think because it's a cooperative...
There are some part of its stock which is floated on the market.
I see.
Okay, so you can go and buy stock as such. So do you want to do some short selling and make some money?
Me?
Yeah.
No. Like I said, when it comes to finance, I'm a bit of a duffer. I probably wouldn't be able to do something like that, which is why I let Amir answer that question so eloquently.
There is a guy called Martin Van Beenen. Okay? And he's got some very strong views. He's a New Zealand journalist. He's pretty strong on certain things. He says, give me the job and this is what I'm going to do. He says, I'll cut the staff cost. They're paid too much by about 50%. Then he says that, the PR stinks. So he says, get the previous captain of the All Blacks and make him the PR man, Richie. Because then the farmers won't sort of crib, you know. Because what Richie says is right. Okay. And the most important thing, what they say, is sell all the branded products, the so-called value-added branded products, because they're not getting in any money as such. Any more suggestions that you could give to Fonterra?
I think the Fonterra, some model like Fonterra, could definitely still work if it's done right. I mean, we have Amul in India, and isn't that a sort of similar run entity?
The Amul is run by a company called the National Dairy Development Board, and the owner of that board is the Gujarat Milk Cooperative Society as such. So it was a project launched in 1969, and I think it took quite some time before the product really caught on. But it's a huge market, so you
absolutely
need,
and that's the difference. Yeah, because
it's a huge market.
Yeah, the comparison between the two is ridiculous. Yeah. But I just like this term that Shane Jones has used to describe. Shane Jones is, of course, a New Zealand First MP. Used to describe Fonterra's problems with the head of Fonterra Dairy Spearings. He says it's fiscal carnage by the Flying Dutchman. So I think that's a really good, interesting term to be using.
But do you know he's going to still get his payout? There's still a part of his payout to be given to him, which is going running in a few, because his payout is linked to certain capital expenditure that Fonterra had to make over a period of time. And so his payout in the coming months is also going to be somewhere in the region of around a couple of millions. Mm. So there is talk going around, is the board going to sort of stand up and tell Mr.
Spearings,
you can take a walk in the park.
Yeah.
But there's something wrong with its culture also. I think there are two authorities, or rather two sets of people. One is Rod Oram. I don't know how many of you all read Rod Oram's articles. Sometimes he does write for the Sunday Star Times. Sometimes he writes in the NBR. NBR is the National Business Review. Mm-hmm. And what he says is, Fonterra needs world-wise people who can make complex, hard decisions. It does not need people who will use their experience to meddle in the roles of management and shareholders, because this risks confusing knowledge with judgment. What have you to say on that? And there is another guy whose name is Glenn Herod. I don't know whether I'm pronouncing their name right. The founder of Happy Cow Milk Company. He says, of course, knowledge and experience are valuable and critical to success. But we should be aware that knowledge is the opposite of originality. And experience is the opposite of creativity. If you're scoring 10 on knowledge and experience, that leaves no room for originality and creativity. Originality and creativity is lacking at Fonterra at this point. Well, apart from Fonterra, what do you think about these concepts of, you know, somebody saying if you're knowledgeable, well, it's good, but it doesn't give you an edge in making a judgment or being objective. And somebody says if you're saying, oh, this guy is very experienced, he'll bring a lot of things to the table. In fact, an experienced person will kill creativity. That is the comment. What have you guys to respond to that?
I think there's an importance of balance in these two concepts, knowledge and experience. Well, you know, there's a saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Mm-hmm. And what's important to take away, Fonterra has grown, it's such a big company. It's done things a certain way and expects a certain reward. I do think that there needs to be a huge amount of spend in R&D. And basically, learning to think outside the box, that's something that's really important. On the other hand, I do think that being a company with a vast amount of knowledge, it does need to try new tricks as well. Mm-hmm. So, as you said, like, it might look at diversifying into other industries. So, obviously, Fonterra is synonymous with dairy, being mm-hmm. a dairy company. Mm-hmm. They could look at maybe some other industries that they could try their luck in. So that's one option.
So you're talking about a very radical move of diversification.
I think with financial results such as these, that might be their only choice. Okay.
Well, their ventures out into Argentina, Brazil, Chile, and China seem to have come a cropper. And they have just sold the Tip Top brand and in the process of selling a few other brands to augment their finances as such. So you are like way ahead and saying,
well, I mean, like, in such an outcome, you know, you do have to think about outside the box, so that something to keep in mind.
Let's hear the journalist.
Like I said, business decisions are not my forte, but I agree with the maid in the sense that there needs to be a balance between radical thinking in a corporation such as this and mm-hmm. experience and knowledge. Mm-hmm. Right now, experience and knowledge and middle-aged businessmen is clogging the whole place up. I mean, you know,
it's, kick them out.
I hate that argument normally, that the patriarchy and middle-aged white men are ruling our lives and all these things. But especially in this case, I think it's a fair point to say, how can Terry Spearings, the head of Fonterra, how can he justify the kind of money he's making, the kind of money he's making when farmers are not getting paid the right...
No, the farmers are getting... Let me tell you, when he was in charge, the farmers got something like about $8.50. That was the highest payout. Currently, they're getting between $6.30 to $6.50 a kilo on the milk solids. But the whole Fonterra model is that on the milk solids and the milk refineries and the milk collection centers and distribution, they're really making money. Their cash flows are really good. But it is this branded products, like they had Tip Top, which they have sold. They've got into now yogurt, and they've got into some types of cheese and ice creams and some side of fancy stuff. So they are being nibbled away at the corners by smaller competitions. So this particular company, Happy Cow Milk Company, he's come up with a new model where he's allowed the small farmers to run their own little dairy as such and to create their own dairy. So Pua is one such example where it runs his own stuff. So a huge giant like this is finding it a bit too difficult to dance to the modern tune.
Yeah.
So what do you suggest? Are you still wanting, should I put your name up there, Chanel?
No. My name is not going up anywhere, please, Richard.
We can make a loud shout.
No, I leave it to people like Alston. Alston to go and make the big decisions.
We'll put Amir up there once he finishes his fixed term, wherever he's working.
That could always be.
That could be. You know, it'll be a huge jump, Amir, for your salary and for your profile. Could buy a few new tuxedos and go to UK and buy a few new suits.
I think that's it. Yeah, I've already got enough tuxedos.
Amir is bawling, don't you know?
Okay. So who are the other companies? What are they doing in the New Zealand market? There's a huge fight going on somewhere in South Auckland between the natives and a huge construction company.
Fletcher Building.
What did they do there now? They're already in deep soup in their finances. Now they've gone ahead and, you know, put their finger in a project where there are issues around land.
Yeah, for those of you who probably have been living under a rock for the past month or so, Fletcher has taken up construction on a site called Ihumato, which is in Mangere, South Auckland. And people are, especially local Maori, are contesting that because they say that is a sacred site, it's a burial ground, and you can't justify building houses on top of that because, well, it's part of their culture, tradition, and it's native and indigenous. However, local iwi of that area, which is the Maori tribe over there, basically, have actually sold that land to Fletcher's. But, of course, building wasn't able to start because of protests of hundreds of people, thousands of people, going there every night, staying there in tents and things like that, leaving school, leaving their jobs, and protesting the move. So Fletcher's, which was already having issues with their finances, have now come under more fire with the idea that they are taking away the rights of the indigenous people of New Zealand and stamping all over. And this is colonization again because, you know, this is what happened hundreds of years ago as well, where land was stolen. I've not been out to Ihumato yet, not because I didn't want to. I just said I haven't had a chance. Uh-huh. Just to see what the idea is. And I feel that, yes, they are justified in protesting for what they feel is their right. But at the same time, Fletcher as a company has dealt with this as a business transaction. If the iwi have sold the land to Fletcher's, then that's how they've gone about it. Because most businesses probably won't be considering things like feelings and, you know, heritage sites and things like that if it's not been branded as such by the whole government. So
on that note of property as such, what's happened, Amir? The market seems to be not really ticking away as everybody's talking about.
Exactly. It's an interesting topic, Richard. Even with the interest rate cuts by 50 basis points, one staggering note is that the property market has remained the same as it is, or rather it seems to deteriorate a little bit. Property values in Auckland, we can see, have continued to slip backwards a little bit. It's decreased by 2.6% annually. However, the recent decline, we also need to look at the long-term impact of a growth of 42% of the last 5 years.
Oh.
So compared to 5 years ago, over 2014, when it seemed like house prices would increase exponentially and never come down, there has been quite
2%
a shock.
Is not a big deal.
2% fall hasn't really helped a lot, basically stimulate the market. Mm-hmm. However, looking nationally, we can see that there's a similar story in a lot of big cities where house prices have either stagnated or have decreased over the past 3 months. Mm-hmm. Although, when I say that, it's important to know that a lot of the smaller cities, Hamilton, Tauranga, Wellington and Dunedin, they have seen growth, much better growth than Auckland in the last couple of years, with Christchurch being an exception where its house prices basically stagnate over the last 5 years due to the boom after the earthquake. So that's something that's interesting to see.
So would you recommend people to make investment in some of the provincial towns out of the equity that they have got in Auckland and make killing, or is the market now sort of stabilizing and the steam in some of this provincial town is running out?
I would personally, in my opinion, I would say some provincial areas are really good for buying. For example, because of the high costs in Auckland, areas around the Auckland periphery are some things that people need to look at. Mm-hmm. I've recently in the news, you could see that the Drury and Papakura area, all the way out to Pukekohe, there's plans by the council to rezone. It's already been rezoned to have 34,000 more homes. Mm. So in terms of looking out there for first-home buyers, that's something that's definitely to look at. For more provincial areas, I think it's important that people do their research before buying it. Houses in those places, some places outperform others. Napier, Hastings is an area that's quite hot with the retirement market. So that area has seen a lot of growth over the last 4 years, and it's still growing as well. So yes, I'd say mostly do your research. Some areas are quite hot property, especially areas around the Auckland periphery. Definitely have a look at those.
Are you planning to buy a house, Chanel?
I would like to buy a house. Mm-hmm. And if my boss is listening right now, that means I would like to have a raise as well to be able to buy a house. I would like, and it's always interesting to see. The one thing I have in my favor is that I live with a real estate agent, and that is my mother, not what anybody else is thinking. And you know, she's always got an insight into the property market and seeing how it goes. And she says that this is a property cycle. It rises, it falls, and that's how it is. She says when I asked her this morning, you know, what her thoughts were, she goes like up till at least about 6 months ago, the problem was that vendors were just unrealistic in their expectations of selling, and now they're meeting the market, and so the things will sell faster now, and it'll sort of stabilize the market now, because you just have to have those rises and falls with property, and that happens every year. And so I'm just saying, look out to the property news and look for the best time to invest, and yeah, go for it.
So what I would say is a wonderful round of discussions on current topics and current events in New Zealand. When do we meet next? 1 month later?
Whenever you say, Richard.
Yeah, 1 month later. A couple of announcements. The Indian Catholic group is having his Independence Dance. But before that, there is a wonderful mass at St. John Vianney, where the program is being held. So please attend the mass and then go for the Independence Dance. Month end on 31st of August, the Goa ANZ is having their annual function. So please patronize them. And later on in October, you have Mogachi Boshi, the new theatre that is being presented by Auckland actors and performers of the Konkani group. So on that note, ladies and gentlemen, adios, and catch you next week.
Sa lo ve.